You can listen to The Professional Left on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, or at our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com, where you can also contribute to this podcast. There's a PayPal button at our website, or you can mail us a letter and or contribution at P.O. Box 9133, Springfield, Illinois, 62791.
This is the podcast for May 26th, 2017. It's not safe for work.
Coming to you live from the headquarters of the Cornfield Resistance, where we never take the fifth. It's the Professional Left with Driftglass and Blue Gal.
We just say guilty.
Yeah, well, and, you know, we couldn't continue to be not safe for work if we took the fifth. Because we have to share our feelings, and our feelings often involve F-bombs and so forth. Although I feel I cheated Bob Seska on the on his after party,
yes.
I didn't swear nearly enough.
Oh, well, we want to thank Bob Seska for having us on the show with his trickle-down show. You know, he gets audience from Stephanie Miller, he said, and then we get audience from him, new listeners. I said, it's just like trickle down, but it's trickle down that actually works. Yeah,
and then we give audience members to the Crooked Media, Pod Save America.
And then
they go on real time and forget all about us.
Uh-huh. I don't think we did that.
No. I got that part wrong. That twist.
We're not jealous. We're not bitter.
No. That twist in the Mobius strip, in the M.C. Escher drawing of how this works, that's missing, I'm afraid.
That's missing.
Yeah.
No, I get you, Driftglass. So Pod Save America, we bless your hearts and congratulations on your success. But you don't get to wake up with Driftglass every day. So we'll just call it even, okay? You have a million listeners and I get to wake up with Driftglass.
Exactly. And we are the grassiest of the grassroots.
We are. We're really grassy. Yeah. We'll give you a hay fever if you come too close.
We will. And this was a big week in farewell party plans.
And actually, I have a question for you about that.
Sure.
Because one of our imaginary sponsors is Where the Good Lord Split You, Emergency Farewell Party Planners.
Yes.
But do you get a party, a going away party, for just withdrawing your nomination or deciding you don't want the job after all before you've been? We're talking about Joe Lieberman, of course, today. We are recording on Thursday, and today, Thursday, Joe Lieberman said, no, this ain't worth the pay cut.
No. What the hell was I thinking?
Yeah.
I'm making a shitload of money out here, jerking you people around from the outside.
Seriously. And because Donald Trump hired one of his law partners to be his personal attorney in the, as Joe Lieberman put it in his letter to President Stupid.
Yeah.
In the upcoming investigations, not mentioning Russia or anything at all.
In the many travails you have ahead. I cannot be there with you, but in spirit. Yeah.
It really is. And so much for that. Both sides of the aisle adore Joe Lieberman.
Yeah. Boy, do they. That was the funniest thing to watch, because there was, for about 2 minutes, it was, he's very well respected on both sides of the aisle. And there was this collective, oh, fuck no. And you could hear them like, we're getting word from someplace called the rest of America that, no, apparently Joe Lieberman is considered a giant douchebag by most of the people on the left.
Yes,
the word got through. And
and when we say the left, we mean the left from the 50-yard line over, not just the extreme left like us. No,
we're the extreme.
And we're not even extreme left. I don't think we're as extreme as some people. So
no, we're pretty middle-of-the-road liberals. I mean, we're pretty straightforward. You know, if there's a Harry Truman, Franklin Roosevelt Democrat, that's us.
That's us.
Or should it be Eleanor
you
Roosevelt.
You want more left than that?
That's fine.
I don't know where that podcast is. So
yeah, show us your pamphlet. If you're more left than that, I'll happily.
You can come to the picnic. No, we're not excluding anybody who wants to get rid of Trump at this point, really. Yeah. Although I have warned.
Yes, we are.
Several ex-Republicans or current Republicans who are never Trumpers, that there is no lifeboat for you. You have a choice to change parties or the lava is going to cover you too, because all of those guys, all of those people who were former speechwriters and former Bushites and so forth had just as much invested in undoing Obamacare and tax cuts for billionaires. And the fact is, as I've said many times, your policies are terrible for people.
Yeah.
And so there's no lifeboat for you to get out and be, you know, but not all Republicans are like this. No, all Republicans are like you.
Yeah,
and
you all prospered from this.
We are setting fire to the boats. You do not get off this island. You are stuck with this president and this party and this body slammer that apparently is going to win the election today because Republicans in Montana like body slamming reporters.
Sure they do. Well, no, the magic, if you want to be, and I've written about this two or three times already, or maybe 1,000, I'm not sure. But you know, there are plenty of people who screwed up, followed Bush off the cliff, realized the error of their ways, walked it back, and said, you know what, liberals were right. Bruce Bartlett is one of those people. Little Green Footballs, Charles Johnson, one of those people.
Yep.
There are people, the magic word and the magic phrase is, look, liberals were right about the right all along. That's it.
I was wrong and I'm changing parties. Yeah.
And I'm not, it's not I was wrong and the extremes on both sides are
to blame.
That is a lifeboat for conservatives and Republicans who want to pretend to be independent and don't want to face the righteous retribution of history.
Right.
And it comes down them like a fucking hammer. They want to be able to skate right down the middle and say, well, you know, I got some of it right, but liberals are equally bad, too.
No.
And the world is full of those people. And apparently all of them work on television.
Exactly. Exactly. NBC News is saying, you know, this is what's wrong with our politics is body slamming.
Yeah.
And to Twitter's credit, that NBC News tweet had 100 replies of stop it with the both siderist bullshit. And so it's we're not alone on an island somewhere screaming this and not being heard. Really, this is getting
they're not listening to us.
Yeah.
But we are listening to each other and everyone's noticing the fact that every single fucking time the Republicans blow their own dick off, it's the extremes on both sides are to blame. And and it's so automatic and so robotic at this point that it's beyond being a punchline. It's basically Hugh Hewitt's resume. It's Matt Dodd's resume. It's what Ron Fournier does for a living. And again, the enduring question is, at no point will anyone step out from the shadows and say, the reason I have these losers on staff who all lie in the same way is blah, blah, blah. But the answer is pretty obvious. I mean, you can deduce the answer. The answer is, I don't want to lose a third to a quarter of my audience who are Trump morons by telling them every day that, they're brainwashed zombie losers and they're the reason this country is broken. I will not do that. My advertisers will kill me. My profits will fall. My ratings will shred. So I need to keep putting out these assholes out there, despite the fact that they are destroying the country with this toxic lie. My bottom line, Jeff Zucker, my bonuses, Andy Lack, depend on lying to the American people and telling them that both sides are to blame for every single Republican atrocity.
Okay, but then how do you explain, DriftQuest, how do you explain the fact that Sean Hannity has lost so many advertisers in the past 3 days?
Oh, he went too far. You know, you never go full Hannity.
That's from that movie, right?
Yeah, it's from Tropic Thunder, and I'm not going to repeat
We're not going to repeat it because it's got the R word, and we don't use that word on this podcast.
You never go full InfoWars, and Sean Hannity went full InfoWars, and he went, and here's the thing. So many people followed him down that road, and been on the same road with him on that road for years, for decades. A prominent ghoul is Newt Gingrich.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So where's Newt Gingrich today? Well, if you look on the Washington Post, as I did this morning, the Washington Post op-ed page, at the bottom of the page, the electronic version of the page are Seth Rich's parents who are begging the right-wing hate machine to stop tormenting them by politicizing, by lying about their son's murder. But, of course, exploiting dead Americans is what Republicans
do. Fox News in particular, yes.
This is the entire Bush administration.
And Benghazi, absolutely.
The entire Bush administration, the whole Iraq war, all of the liberal free fire zone that they established, the entire we're going to roll back everything liberals said or did. We're going to be able to get everything we want. It was all based on exploiting dead Americans from 9/11, playing on people's patriotism, getting them terrified and saying, if you're not with us, you're with the bad people.
Right.
And Newt Gingrich has been doing this for literally 20 years. He has been ginning up fake charges, fake conspiracies about how liberals are behind murders, or liberals are responsible, or liberalism caused so-and-so to murder her child. This is 20 years ago. Newt Gingrich has been an absolute scumbag, an absolute ghoul for decades, and he keeps being put back on television. So today, there are Seth Rich's parents in the Washington Post making a very heartfelt, heartbreaking plea to please stop doing this.
Yeah, this was 2 days ago, I think, Tuesday.
Yeah. And then you go to the top of the page, there's Newt Gingrich talking about what a genius Donald Trump is. And, of course, because it's Fred fucking Hyatt, he gives Newt Gingrich a whole blurb about his book. Lets him announce that he has an upcoming book. So another slab of unreadable, self-aggrandizing Newt Gingrich grifting prose.
Co-written, I'm sure. Yeah. Yes. Yes.
And he gets to write this shit. He gets to skate on this shit. He gets to be rehabilitated forever, resurrected a million times by people in the media who absolutely know better and don't care. Chuck Todd and David Gregory put this scumbag on their show over and over again because they don't fucking care. Mm-hmm. Because they know he's a liar, but they know, as Dave Weigel told me personally, he's quotable.
He's quotable, and he knows how to speak in segments of television. Exactly.
And the wrong people in this country getting body slammed.
Yeah, so, that's right.
So,
but what I got in response to some of that on Twitter from right wingers who found me is, you know, pointing out that not only did the family of Seth Rich actually write an op-ed, but Fox News itself had withdrawn the story about Seth Rich.
Yep.
Fox News officially did that. And pointing that out to people, the knee-jerk reaction was, well, you know, as long as it's WAPO, that's Podesta.
Right.
Podesta owns the Washington Post, apparently.
Yeah, he does. I didn't know that, but he does.
And so, you know, anything that's in the Washington Post at that particular second is suspect immediately.
Part of the secret liberal conspiracy.
Now, never mind that, as you said, 2 days later, Newt Gingrich is pimping his book on the same page.
Right.
You know, because Podesta wants Newt Gingrich to have book sales, right?
Right. Yes.
And boy, that Podesta thing is so Emmanuel Goldstein. It really is. He is their punching bag. Everything, every conspiracy known to man goes through John Podesta.
Or like, Saul Alinsky.
Or George
Sidney
Soros.
Blumenthal.
Yeah, George Soros. Sidney Blumenthal. Yes. Yeah, yes.
You know what we're talking about.
You know what we're talking about. Yeah. So, what, Eastern Europeans? No, that's not what I meant.
No. Much more highly specific than that. No, no. And they're very predictable in this way. Mm-hmm. And that's what makes them a great audience because, you know, 30, 40, 50, however many, 60 million of these meatheads are completely predictable. Yep. You push a button, you get a result. You push another button, you get another result. You put in a new piece of firmware that says nobody cares about deficits and everybody loves czars now. And if the president decides he wants to take a bunch of shit ton of money under the table from foreign countries, that's okay. You just replace their programming and they will go right back and they'll do the exact opposite of what they said yesterday with no memory that they did it. That makes them a perfect consumer audience because they are absolutely brainwashed meatbags and they will sit in front of their tube with their remote screaming about Sidney Blumenthal and George Soros and whatever comes in front of them, they will see and ingest and believe and act upon. And so you have two separate brands. You have the Fox News brand, and then you have the Sean Hannity brand, which is almost congruent, but not quite. Because Sean Hannity also has a radio show, and he has a separate following. And when it was run by Roger Ailes, you could see Ailes' leash on Hannity. It wasn't very tight, but there were guardrails. There's the shit you didn't run with too far because you get out too far of your skis and you look like a fool and you damage the brand. Sean Hannity is a totally evil human being and who knows he has complete control over his audience because they're just as scummy as he is. And so he can tell them any fucking thing he wants and they'll believe him. The problem is if Fox News makes him walk it back. And remember, the worst thing you can do as a conservative is not, you know, consigning 23 million of your fellow citizens to have their insurance taken away or closing down Meals on Wheels or shutting down school lunch programs and letting kids starve. That's not the worst shit you can do. Because you know what? Poverty is just a state of mind. The worst thing you can do is apologize in front of the fucking liberals for getting something wrong. That's the worst sin of all. And they will do anything to avoid it. So Sean Hannity apologized but didn't apologize. Walked back out of respect for the family. He's going to suddenly decide he has a conscience. No, Sean Hannity is really, truly an awful, awful person. And because his owner, his keeper, is now dead and unlamented in the ground, there's no one to keep him under control. And Fox News has a problem because he's also their bread and butter. Because now Bill O'Reilly's busy, sharing a podcast with whoever the hell. Oh, yeah, Glenn Beck. So they have a small problem because their money makers are dropping like flies.
And yeah, right.
I don't know. They give Hugh Hewitt.
And their ratings are in the toilet. This is the thing. The people are turning off. And I think they're turning off Fox, and I think it's because...
Too liberal, Miguel.
No, I don't think that's it. I do think that there is a segment of that 31% of Republicans, which now is down to like 21%. It's like there's between a 7 and 10% wavering thing of, we remember the shame of Bush just enough that we're going to back off. And probably what it means is back away from politics altogether, which is actually the easier route to take.
Yeah.
I just don't do politics. You know, I'm not interested in politics. And they'll go back to voting Republican again. They'll vote Republican for their congressman. But they're not going to be publicly shamed the way they were with Bush. And there's a self-preservation thing that's going on with just enough of their audience that you can notice in the poll numbers.
Yeah.
And they're not watching Hannity. Hannity is third place now. Hasn't that always been the thing that Fox News defenders would push right to the front of the page? But our ratings.
Back 1,000 years ago, I'm going to sit in my rocking chair. Old Uncle Jeff guy's going to talk to you about the old days now. I'm going to talk to you about back when we made lemonade out of real lemons on the back porch. Last July. Yeah, last July. When I was much younger than I am now. Back when Brian Williams got whacked, and I don't like Brian Williams. I think he sucks as a show host. He's an affable, glad-handing, empty sack who just both sides the shit out of everything. Mm-hmm. I think his predicate is, I just don't want to get fired again. I just don't want to get fired again. So he just sits there and cracks wise and lets everyone join in, no matter how ludicrous their point of view, because that makes management happy. But he got fired for lying. And then some clever people like Rachel Maddow said, hey, you know, notice that Bill Riley's been lying about really important shit, too. Like he was never in combat. And he said he was a witness to the suicide of the person who claimed that they were involved in the Kennedy assassination. And he was 1,000 miles away. Yeah, Bill O'Reilly lies about a lot of shit. What do you say about that, Fox News? Because you certainly were jumping up and down on Williams. So he was fired and then gloating over the fact that, you know, you can't have a liar on the air. And the answer was always the same. It was the same answer Donald Trump gave every time he got in trouble, which is my ratings are great. Look at my numbers. Look at my numbers. My ratings are awesome. I'm best at everything. And that's the only thing Roger Ailes ever said about backing his man was not that he's an amoral leech, not that he's a carbuncle on the ass of civilization, which Bill O'Reilly certainly was and is, but that his ratings are good. His numbers are good. And in the TV world, the soulless monsters who run the TV world, and I include Andy Lack and the rest of them with that, the people who run MSNBC and the people who run CNN are just as soulless, just as calculating, just as completely heedless of the damage they do to democracy as anyone at Fox.
Mm-hmm.
But they just have a different mix. They have a different show mix of, you know, a different audience that they're trying to attract and keep. And so all Ailes ever cared about was his numbers. And now that the numbers are falling, you know, where's your fucking alibi now?
Yeah.
Where's your alibi now, Sean? Well, and now he's, you know, freaking out on Twitter, which is hilarious.
Yeah. Yeah. Again, saying no one at Fox tells me what to say.
It's all fascists who are trying to bring me down. Bullshit. And it's a clown show. And you know what? Here's the thing. If there were one beacon other than the Professional Left podcast, which I get tired of listening to because it's my own voice. And I don't like the sound of my own voice. There are several of them. I mean, you know, Frangela Duo, they do a lovely podcast. And as we said, Bob Seska does good work. But if there were, I would just love it. Let me tell you something, Blue Guts. You know how much I hate doing this?
You mean hate doing this with me?
No, no. I love doing anything with you. I hate talking about how stupid and awful and criminal and incompetent and disastrous our government is every fucking week. Yeah. I hate it. Yep. I would rather be doing anything else.
Well, I was thinking about that today, that you know, we are living under the Chinese curse of may you live in interesting times, yeah. Because you and I, if Hillary Clinton was elected, we're going to go off and do a science fiction university, yeah. You know, as a full-time show, sure. And do a little politics, you know, at the end of the week. But really, we were going to start devoting our energy to other things because Hillary was going to be technical and start boring. Drafting legislation and be boring.
And we'd have the Jason Chaffetz half hour once a week.
Yeah, the Jason Chaffetz would be, you know, full time, and probably O'Reilly would still have a job. You know, I mean, I think that the ratings over there would be a lot better. But here's the deal. They have failed so dramatically. The Republican Party has decided today they are looking at the possibility, the Senate is looking at the possibility of delaying the Obamacare repeal to 2020.
Now, sure.
Let's pause and think about that for a minute.
Let's think about the 2020 vision joke.
This was day one. This was going to happen on day one.
Day one. Day one.
Day one. It's horrible. It's destroying people.
Yeah.
It's terrible.
Yeah.
So there's no repeal of Obamacare.
Well, there are 70 repeals of Obamacare.
Mexico,
it didn't count.
Mexico wall.
Wall day two. Day two.
They keep pretending that they've made a down payment on that, right?
Yes. Yes.
They don't know where it's going to go. There's no cooperation from the Army Corps of Engineers as to how you're going to build this thing.
To be fair.
There's no Mexico wall.
To be fair.
Yeah.
They're just waiting for the fucking drywall to show up.
And now the Muslim ban has been smacked down again.
Yeah, for the third or fourth or fifth or eighth time.
In a really vicious way, the court said it's dripping. The court used the word dripping. With religious intolerance.
Yeah.
So that decision with the words dripping with religious intolerance goes to the Supreme Court.
Uh-huh.
And I would not be surprised if they just don't hear the case.
Yeah.
But we'll see. We'll see what happens. So all they've got at this point is a Supreme Court seat that they stole and nothing else. I mean, they don't have their budget process was. First of all, that budget was just pulled out of Steve Bannon's ass. That's all it was just a wish list. They could not increase defense spending to the point that they wanted to and cut taxes to the point that they wanted to and not cut social programs and education in a way that gets everybody's attention. So, and it is a Republican. It is such a Republican budget. It is.
Yeah.
There is nothing about it that is unique a unique outlier in Republican politics to doing this. Right.
No. This is a straight up fuck the poor.
Right.
Take everything away from everyone. Double your military budget because mm-hmm. I heard I can't remember the representative, probably Chris Kennedy, but I'm probably wrong about that. Talk about this as Sparta.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to make every citizen sacrifice so that we can have an awesome military, and that's it.
Yep.
That's all we're going to have. We're going to have a towering, armed to the teeth, monster military, and everyone else is going to be broke.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's basically what the micro brain on the right views America's role as, a big kid with a big stick who can beat the shit out of anybody on the block and take what we want. And if you need visual proof of that, just look up the GIF of President Stupid at the NATO meeting.
Well, I was going to say that it's so related to the NATO thing of pretending, as someone very intelligent person on Twitter said, pretending that NATO is Mar-a-Lago with a huge membership fee that the United States is paid on time every year and every other member is cheating us by not paying the golf club fees. Okay. Mm-hmm. And you have to pay your fair share when the money that we're talking about is going to Raytheon. It's going to Boeing. We are sending troops and planes and drones and technical computer military contract stuff over to Europe.
Mm-hmm.
It is not a check that you write to NATO signed Donald Trump. That's the way he's putting it is I pay my check every year on time and I'm your landlord and you don't pay your fair share. I'm your roommate or your housemate in NATO and I pay every month the rent on time and you don't. And it would be really, you know what would be fun?
And
is if Andrea Mitchell would come on TV and explain to people how NATO works and where the money actually goes, and that it actually goes to American firms, and that we put a lot of investment in people from flyover country who joined the military and have never been overseas in their lives and need to understand what that's like. And we put them in the very, very safe country of Germany to train so that they have some experience overseas before we set them loose and wherever we're going to set them loose. That is a life-changing experience for so many of our military. It's their first time setting foot
anywhere
in a country that is not the United States.
Yeah. Yep.
You know, for that, for a lot of people in this country, I'm telling you, Florida is an exotic vacation.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well,
and
it is for us, too, so.
Yeah. We are not going to Florida this year, no.
No. As the joke in our house is when we visit the islands, it's either rock or blue, so. Take your choice.
So, yes. So, it is, and it's what I wish for every person who's ever typed MAGA and meant it, is to get, it's to give them a trip to Europe.
Yeah.
And all expenses paid, and you're going to get to go see Belgium, you know, which is a hellhole. You know, it's a hellhole.
Hellhole. It's a hellhole. It used to be so beautiful. Many people told me what a beautiful place this used to be, and now it's just, look at this, it's shit. It's all shit.
And then he went there.
Yep.
And there were all these white people protesting just like home.
Oh, my God.
With pussy hats on, no less.
Oh, my God. No, no, I was referring to the visual of Thug Trump shoving everyone out of the way so he could be the
first one. Oh, my God.
I mean, literally, this is literally who
shoved members of NATO
elected
out of sight.
Just
push
my. I get to be in front. I pay more than anybody here. It's my golf course. I get to be in front. And again, there are 60 some odd million Americans who look at that and say, great, that's awesome. We should be shoving those little fuckers around because that's who we are.
We're America.
And that's
right.
That, you know, that's where we stand now, because this is our man overseas. I'd like to start our show.
28 minutes in. Okay.
20 minutes in. I wanted to jot down some lyrics when you mentioned the Supreme Court not hearing the case. I wanted it from Tommy. Johnny, can you hear me? Johnny, can you hear me? Okay, it's a future post. Yeah, right in front of you. You just saw the magic, people. I just showed you a little bit of the magic.
I was inspired.
When the Supreme Court is asked to hear this stupid Muslim ban case, you will probably see a post from me with the title "Johnny, Can You Hear Me?" Yeah. So that'd be John Roberts. That's a reference to a musical group that old people listen to called the. Anyway,
I do want to get into vetting and talk about vetting. So let's make that the core of our show near the end and get through some of the other things that.
Well,
that happened this week.
Yeah, one of the side. I mean, as everyone knows, students in Indiana walked out on their awful, awful former governor, who's also the worst vice president since Agnew, Cheney, not very long, at Notre Dame, thus exercising their constitutional right to self-expression and their First Amendment rights in a completely nonviolent, completely appropriate protest, which Ron Fournier shit his pants over and, you know, and chided them that they should stay and maybe listen to people who have different opinions than you. You know what? These are people graduating from college. I'm guessing sometime in the last 4 years, they heard someone.
They knew exactly what Mike Pence was doing.
They knew exactly. Yeah. They know exactly. And they're not, you know, drones who are sucking off the wingnut centrist welfare teat for a living, Ron. They actually went to school. They learned some new things. They decided that in an act of civil disobedience, harming no one.
And actually, you say civil disobedience, but they got together with the administration of Notre Dame first to let them know what they wanted to do.
Like all
The university, you know, the university didn't sign off on it because they don't have the right to sign off on anything that's not, you know, a nonviolent protest. But they were aware that this was going to happen. And it was done with civility.
Maturity, well-organized.
Maturity, and we've organized this. We're going to do this. We want you to know we're not, you know, we're not being destructive of the ceremony, but we're not going to sit and listen to a former governor who showed such hatred toward the LGBT community and was a failed governor and became vice president because no one in Indiana was going to have him anymore.
And we're not going to interrupt him. We're not going to throw eggs. We're just going to walk out. And
we're gonna walk
it's
out.
Weird that a side effect of a simple student, a nonviolent, very effective protest at a major university could cause so many journalists to forget how the fucking First Amendment works.
Well, you know, we could do those journals. We could just body slam them.
We could. Maybe that would remember. Knock something loose from upstairs back when they remembered they were journalists. But yeah, there's this is just like, you realize that the thing you are pissed at these students for doing mm-hmm. falls into the same amendment that protects you right. and the job that you do when you dress up and pretend to be a journalist. Because let's face it, Ron, you're not a fucking journalist. But yeah, you get to keep your job and you get to be protected and you get to have a shield around you because of the same amendment that protects these kids' rights to know exactly what they're doing, to stand up and walk out of someone who's a hateful, antithetical to everything they believe in on the most important day of their lives. Absolutely.
Right.
And if you don't get that, Ron, get another fucking job because you're certainly not doing the one you got very well. Which leads us to...
President Stupid keeps blabbing secret information like right next to Bibi Netanyahu. The look on Bibi's face was hilarious.
Israel, Israel. I never said nothing about Israel.
I never said nothing about Israel. I never said it.
Yeah.
You got that wrong.
Yeah.
And then apparently we have the transcript of his phone call with the brutal dictator of the Philippines apparently killed 7,000 people on the street rather than put them on trial for drug dealing.
And Donald Trump compliments.
Yeah, he's like doing a great job. You know, that's great.
He's such a great job.
And let's be clear. The Philippines does have a problem with terrorism and ISIS. And
oh, yeah.
God bless the people of the Philippines. They are dealing with stuff that we're not dealing with. I get that.
It's many, 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 many islands.
Yeah.
It's really hard to govern a country like that, given just its geography and its history. I lived there for...
Shooting 7,000 people in the street. And saying it's for drug war is pretty brutal and not exactly in keeping with human rights that the United States should stand for. But not only saying to him, you're doing a great job on the whole drug thing, but also, you know, we got these nuclear submarines over there and over by Korea.
Go ahead.
Do you want, I was going to say, you want the longitude and latitude? Because I have to look that up.
Yeah. And about, by my count, 720 seasoned 30-year veterans in the Pentagon simultaneously and with military precision shit their pants.
Vomited. Yes, I was going to say.
What the fuck did that idiot do now?
Yeah.
Yeah, he just decided to tell a brutal second-world dictator, whom he's getting along with, exactly where our nuclear submarines are, because that's fun, because he's a child. Again, the thing about this and the thing about it wasn't Israel. This is how a four-year-old tries to avoid confessing to a crime.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you come into the room, there's a tremendous shattering of glass. You come into the room, they're holding a hammer, and they're like, I didn't break the vase.
Remember youngest child? Wait, you met youngest child when she was four.
Yeah.
And do you remember her line all the time? She'd be standing in the middle of this pile of cereal in the middle of the kitchen floor.
What's that?
And she'd say, it was an accident.
Accident happened. Even then she knew how to use the passive voice. It wasn't.
Right.
Accident happened.
Accidents happen. Yeah. And this was an accident.
Yeah, there's a little story that goes through my extended family about walking into the three-year-old standing at the coffee table that shattered in every direction.
Oh, my God.
And the first words out of her mouth are, there was this bee. And really, he lies like a stupid child.
Yeah.
And the thing
is... And what was the other line in your family? Somebody hit me back?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Stevie hit me back.
Stevie hit me back.
Like, okay, thank you.
Yeah, it's that kind of maturity that we have from the president of the United States. I can barely say those words in
and
a row anymore.
Everyone around him knows it. Everyone on earth, everyone but 63 million meatheads who believe every fucking word he says, who are just as bad and dumb and racist and uninformed and desperate and egomaniacal and hateful as he is, everyone else knows it. And that's really, this is the big divide. When does someone have the courage, Rachel Maddow, to stand up, Lawrence O'Donnell, and point a finger, Chris Hayes, and say, the problem is the fucking Republican base.
Yeah.
The problem is those people. Those people are a poison. They're a toxin in our body politic.
Well, I think it is starting to happen because this body slamming of the reporter and then finding out that people on the street, in other words, in the gas stations of Montana, are saying, well, that's my kind of politician. And you realize, oh, I see. So when Donald Trump says the press is the enemy of the people, you go along with that.
They stand up and sing, Tomorrow Belongs to Me.
Yeah, right.
Because that's who they are. This is not what they're pretending to be. This is who they are. They're not going to change. This is their nature.
So when you use all your both-sider stuff to keep them in your camp, you got to remember they're not on your side.
Well, they don't care.
And they're, and they don't care.
They don't care. As long as they keep buying dick pills and reverse mortgages, I don't care. Whatever I have to tell them to keep them watching is what I'll do.
Yeah.
On the other hand, literally on the other hand, apparently Mr. Macron crushed Donald Trump's tiny baby hand.
Oh, and a big hard handshake?
Big hard handshake and wouldn't let up.
Out-handshaked him. Yeah.
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 Apparently he figured out that's his Achilles heel, no pun intended.
Yeah.
And he decided he would crush his little baby hand, and he did.
Well, and after Melania swatted that hand several times this week, that hand's had a hard week. It really
has. Not a good week for tiny hands of Donald Trump or people named Sean. of course, you have Sean Hannity, who literally lost his mind on Twitter and went on a raving, which he does a lot. This is the funny thing about Twitter. It's true for everyone who has a byline, from Glenn Greenwald to Sean Hannity.
To her credit, to Joanne Reed. And she says true things on Twitter.
Oh, no, that's not where I was going with this.
Okay.
What's going with this is Twitter is this free fire zone.
Well, that's what I mean. Yeah, it's a free. Oh, go ahead.
Where you can say the worst, most heinous shit on Twitter, and no one will ever ask you about it on the air.
We're saying the same thing.
Okay, I'm sorry.
But I'm saying that Joanne Reed has that same freedom.
Oh, yes.
On Twitter, but uses it for good.
Yes. Yes.
So that's what I'm saying. Yeah.
Then we are in complete. The person who probably would have freaked out most if he were at Notre Dame was Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross, because apparently the whole concept of protesting is very un-American to him. He doesn't like it. It makes him sad. It makes him poop twice as often every day. It just scares him. He's a frightened old man. You know what country he loves?
Saudi Arabia.
Man, you guys don't have any protesters here.
Because they get their hands cut off.
Can I sleep over? This is great. You got a big orb and you got swords and there are no protesters. Can I stay up at night and stay here for the weekend?
No, he can't stay up at night because he fell asleep during Donald Trump's speech.
Yeah. Well, he's heard it before.
It was okay because he was thinking about money. So it was billable hours.
I counted money in my sleep.
He was dreaming about money. Yes.
For all these poor people, I was taking away everything they had. It made me so happy. I have a little boner sleep. No, it's Sean Hannity, bad week for him, but bad week for Sean Spicer.
Yeah.
No hope for you.
This was cruel.
This
was
just
really
fucking
cruel.
And I have worked for a boss like this.
Yes.
Who's just, and this is something that we on the left need to understand. There are some people out there who are just sadistic assholes. They're not sadistic assholes because, or in spite of, or on Tuesdays, they're just wretched human beings. And you have to understand them when you see them. Because if you don't, you're going to keep making excuses for maybe he had a bad day. Maybe he fell off his bike. Maybe. No. Bad person, bad brain. Donald Trump just enjoys tormenting people and being cruel to people. And he decided that the one person he was not going to bring on his entourage to see the Pope was lifelong devout Catholic Sean Spicer.
Right.
Who's taken more incoming verbal fire for that asshole than any man should and should have quit.
To be fair, he shouldn't be in that job because he should have walked out.
Right.
A good Catholic would walk out. but that said, to drag Sean Spicer for no reason whatsoever to the Middle East and then send him home halfway through because something else is more important at home, whatever it is, and not let him meet the Pope is nasty. Nasty.
It's on purpose, and it's shitty. And because Donald Trump is a shitty, shitty person. And if you voted for him, you're a shitty person, too.
Well, and I can understand why you would send Steve Bannon home before you got to the Pope, because, you know.
Well, you can't cross over running water.
You can't cross, exactly.
If the sun hits him, he bursts into flames. Bad things happen. Bad things. And you don't want him walking into the Vatican and just start screaming and yelling in tongues and
Yeah,
shooting blood out of his eye.
Exactly.
No, that would be bad. Speaking of shooting blood in every direction.
Yeah.
Apparently, Michael Flynn has been told to bend over.
Yeah.
By everybody.
Yeah. By everybody. And your companies as LLCs or incorporated entities can't plead the fifth.
No, we're coming for your stuff.
We're coming for your paperwork.
Yeah.
And I'm really looking forward to seeing how soon we get to Donald Trump's tax returns.
Yeah. Yeah.
How soon that becomes an essential element of the investigation.
Yeah. Sorry.
And, you know, we can go to the IRS and get them.
Yeah.
The White House doesn't have to release anything. We will ask the IRS which years are under audit and find out it's none of them.
Mm-hmm.
And but if there is one that's under audit or two or three or whatever, we'll exempt those and we'll take the rest.
Well, can I jump ahead to two things?
Mm-hmm.
They're sort of back to back. Paul Manafort, apparently today, we're recording this on Thursday because we have a graduation ceremony tonight.
Yeah.
And then we have a bunch of stuff tomorrow. And
it's getting to the end of the school year. It's just crazy.
It's crazy. I tell you, it's just crazy. And my wife insists on volunteering and being a good person and keeping Crooks and Liars running and volunteering us for the Top Seska podcast, which I still don't think is a real thing. So we end up with a lot less time than we think we do. But Paul Manafort apparently was in contact and continued advising the Trump team even after the FBI launched its Russia probe against him.
Yeah.
That's one.
Because money.
Because money.
Yep.
And then Jeff Sessions, it turns out today, lied about meeting with his Russian handler. And we're just going to call him his Russian handler because let's face it, that's what they are.
Mm-hmm.
Which brings the number of times he lied under oath to get the job about Russia to a lot.
Yep, yep.
And brings, I believe, the total number of Trump entourage flunkies with sketchy Russian ties who lied about it to all of them. Pretty much all of them, with a very few exception. All of his inner circle have these fucked up, weird ties to Russia that they lied about on official forms. They lied about to the FBI. They got a lot of money for doing shit that they don't want to talk about.
Right,
and
right.
Nobody wants to talk about the taxes or where the money came from. And they're just, and they're all... And Michael Flynn's the first, but he won't be the last to plead the fifth.
Right.
And there's no way all these lines don't converge in the Kremlin. There just isn't. And it might all be a gigantic coincidence. And it's all harmless, but it's not. But it's absolutely not.
I don't think that Donald Trump is smart enough to have colluded.
No.
Tit for tat. But I absolutely believe the CIA director, the intelligence director this week, who told the Senate. Or was it the House or the Senate? It was the House because it was Trey Gowdy's wonderful moment. That's what it was.
We got to talk about Trey Gowdy. Yeah, we
got to talk about Trey Gowdy. But saying, you know, most people who commit treason don't realize until it's too late.
Most four-year-olds.
Their Russian handler has taken advantage of them.
Right.
Well, and the Russians are very good at this.
Yeah.
But all you have to do with Donald Trump is wave around a lot of real estate money.
Yeah.
And he's going to do what you want.
Right.
And that's all these shell companies and all this... It's all dirty. It's all just dirty. And I just think that he was mesmerized by the fact that these oligarchs have tons of money to throw around. And it doesn't matter where it came from. And he wants to loot the treasury just like, you know, he wants to be Putin.
Right.
He wants to be that strongman leader. We'll divide up the world, you and I, Vlad, you know, and be rich.
Well, then the most likely scenario is that they got their hooks into him back, you know, during the collapse. And before that, back, you know, during the many times when he needed cash,
we'll
and nobody
lend
was,
you money, Donald.
Nobody was giving money to anybody, and much less to a sketchy grifter like Donald Trump. Suddenly he was flush with cash. And he could prop up his real estate and keep everything rolling and keep everything going. And even his sons are saying, we don't need a lot of domestic banks. We get a shitload of money from Russia. And, you know, and then comes all it's like hanging out with your drug dealer. Suddenly, all of your friends are also friends of your drug dealer. You know, your buddy is Paul Manafort. Hey, I like a Carter Page. He seems like a nice fella. Yeah. And suddenly, all of your friends are your drug friends. And maybe you personally don't deal. Maybe you're personally not out there killing people on the street. But you sure as shit know a lot of people who are. And they're certainly connected to you by cash and by doing things you shouldn't, oughtn't have done. And that you desperately don't want anyone to know about or talk about. And that you're willing to do what Nixon did, which instead of saying when the Watergate break-in happened, he was so wired into the paranoia and secrecy and hate and siege mentality of his own White House. Instead of doing what the smart thing, which was not burn the tapes, it was turn everybody over.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when they come in and say, oh, we broke into this shit, now we're caught, call up the FBI and say, I have a whole bunch of criminals here, come get them. And then you make an apology on television. But Nixon was congenitally unable to do the one thing that might have saved him. Plus, all these guys knew he's dark as shit.
Yep.
So he's trapped. Donald Trump is trapped. There's no way that the investigation is not going to start flipping people over on him. And there's no way he can start ratting them out, because then it's over. Then the whole brand is dead and his kids have nothing. So he's got to just stonewall until the last possible minute, and do what he always did with bankruptcy, which is hope he can find enough fucking lawyers with shady contacts who know enough loopholes to get him the hell out of trouble and screw everyone else. And that's really all he cares about. And here we are. So now we have Ben Carson.
Oh, man.
You know, the side effect, just the kooky side effect of having this incredibly racist, stupid, unqualified lout who learned the secret coding language of the wingnut brain better than anyone else who was running for president on the right, and told them the lies they wanted to hear more convincingly or loudly or brashly, more with less camouflage, more racism, because that's what they wanted to hear. And that's the side effect of that, is you get some like just lunatic like Ben Carson, now in charge of HUD, who sits there and wants to explain to you that, you know, poverty is like a state of mind, you know, like life is like a box of chocolates and poverty is like a state of mind.
And he was talking to his former business manager, Williams, right?
Armstrong Williams. Yes, Strong Arm Williams.
Who was the guy who grifted off of his presidential campaign of, yeah, you raised $1 million this year, and we spent $1 million on postage to mail out stuff to raise more money.
Yeah.
And the rest of his campaign is going, you mean, what about appearances? What about stagecraft? What about speeches? What about, leafleting people and stuff?
No, tour.
We're doing fundraising. Right. There's a book tour, and we're going to do fundraising on top of fundraising.
Yeah.
And so he's talking to Armstrong Williams and saying poverty is a state of mind.
Right.
If you're willing end over end to grift off of white conservatives to convince them that they're not racist, yeah, you'll never be poor. Look, that is true.
Look, here's a picture I took right between Ben Carson fella and Michael Steele. I'm no racist. That's a $100,000 photograph. You got to pay through the nose for that. And I mean, this is like Newt Gingrich saying that adultery is a state of mind.
Right.
You know, it's the worst possible losing lunatic. Just the guy who really is out of his mind.
Yeah.
I mean, we'll give him the obligatory gifted neurosurgeon hero props up front. But since those days, he has become like a hatter who has inhaled too much mercury.
Yeah.
He is crazy. Yeah. He is absolutely fucking crazy. And the only words left in his brain are some goofy Randite catchphrases that explain why Ben Carson is successful. Because Ben Carson is blessed by God and deserving and righteous. That's why he's rich. And if you're not, therefore the inverse must be true. If you're poor, that must mean you're flawed, you're weak, you're a moral failure, and God does not love you.
Yeah, and speaking of that, this guy, Greg the body slammer.
Yeah, body slammer.
Greg, whatever his name is. Yeah. He's the next congressman.
It's not Paul Giamatti. Let's not confuse
him. Gianforte, you know, because he's got, that's his forte, is body slamming. Yeah. Okay, I'll remember that from now on. Greg Gianforte, in addition to being a body slammer, is apparently a right-wing Christianist, just big time.
Sure.
And one of the statements he's made in the past 2 days or 2 or 3 days is that there's no biblical basis for retirement.
Yeah. Well, you know, Lazarus lived 700, 800 years, you know.
Exactly. He said that. He literally said that. Moses lived 800 years and never retired. And so we need to recognize that and not retire and not do retirement. Now, I will admit, and I will cop to this, that You can get away with saying something like that to a retired minister.
Sure.
I mean this sincerely when I say it to the retired minister at my church, who does give occasional guest sermons and writes an article in the newsletter and contributes in lots and lots of ways to church, even though he's, you know, in his upper 80s and clearly getting along in years and has physical challenges and so forth. To say to him, to his face, you know, I'm so grateful that you have not really retired. You know, that you are still working for church. That's a nice thing to say. To tell voters that they're really not being biblical enough to retire is I don't know where he thinks that's going to go.
Well, you got to work till you drop.
Exactly.
That's your lot in life.
But I think there's something else to that as well. And this is something I just wanted to talk about in terms of the budget. Because we had a $200 billion mistake in the Trump budget numbers.
$2 trillion.
Was it trillion?
Trillion. With a T. Trillion.
With a T.
$2 trillion air quote mistake
error,
air quote.
That he left in there because he figures he was more conservative in other areas.
Yes, because that's okay. And nobody ever told me I had to show my work, okay?
And then the other quote from that same press conference was, look, we had three choices and we picked the middle one.
Right.
We could say that the tax cuts created deficits. We could say that the tax cuts fixed deficits. Or we could say they're deficit neutral. And so we picked the middle one because, you know, that way you're balanced. You're balanced
both sides.
Right?
We're really working on both sides. You know,
we're really just picking out the one that, you know, doesn't go to either extreme.
You know, we were the third one was going to be called the Soylent Green Budget. Okay. So we were going to not actually eat the poor, but we were going to hunt them for sport because everyone loves doing that.
But here is the elephant in the room about budgets and Social Security.
Yes.
And maybe I've talked about this before.
Uh-huh.
I did some of the calendar work last night and it really did stymie me how soon you and I are going to turn 65 in terms of budget years.
Because
one of the things that the budget directors kept saying was, 10 years out, 10 years, we can't predict everything 10 years out to an exact science, right?
Sure.
10 years from now, people that were born, 10 years now, it's 2017, people that were born in 1962 will turn 65.
Yep.
That's about as much of the tail end of the baby boom as you can get.
Yep.
And so at that point, 10 years out, is when you're going to start seeing a decline in the number of Social Security enrollees.
Right.
Because there's a bust at that point.
Right.
You know, we don't have the millennials won't collect for many, many years. And people do die. I mean, it depends on whether you've how much cocaine you've used over the course of your life. It really literally seems to be that with all the celebrities dying is who's still alive or not, who lives to be 90 and who doesn't is, you know, where you using a lot of drugs. Well, unless you're Keith Richards, that's different.
That's right. He made that deal with the devil.
But this is the elephant in the room, which is there's going to be a lowering of the amount needed to pay the Social Security checks of people.
Yeah.
Starting 10 years out.
Yeah.
Just 10 years from now.
Which is when I plan to become a Republican.
See?
Yeah. And I'm going to strongly believe in the socialism of Social Security and Medicare. But everything else, I did this all by myself, you mooching moochers.
That's the thing. That's the thing.
Mine.
Yeah. Now, what you are also going to see at that point is an explosion in the amount of Medicaid spending.
Yes, you will.
Because people are going to need it.
Uh-huh.
People that go into nursing homes are going to need it. And you're going to see that 20 years out. You're going to see that when the youngest baby boomers turn 75 and older. Mm-hmm. And those that have made it that long are going to need help. And they're going to vote, and their children are going to vote. And this budget process is really attempting to build a wall for rich people against that liability.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. It's a seawall against the rising tide of people.
People.
Uh-huh.
People. Yes, people. So just wanted to toss that out there that it just occurred to me last night that it is only 10 years from now that the last baby boomers turn 65,
right.
The ones that make it to that point. This what they are trying to do is say that wealthy people who have made all of their money in the U.S. stock market and in the United on the backs of United States workers and United States ingenuity and United States freedom, protected overseas by the United States military,
United States infrastructure,
with United States infrastructure, that they are not responsible to society for taking care of the elderly of this country
at all, and
at all,
or
period.
Yep. Right. If they're going to all go live in Galt's Gulch and, yep, and admire each other's self-reliance. And mm-hmm, that's really what all of these people have in common. That's how they, and they're there already. You know, yep, they live in that world, and they want to make, yep, sure that the bridges and ladders into that world are burned as efficiently and quickly as possible. Mm-hmm. That's why they want to make, mm-hmm, college impossible for middle class to afford. That's why they want to strip every one of their benefits and turn everything into a Hobbesian war of all against all, where at the end of the day, Americans will be satisfied with picking fruit in Wilbur Ross's garden for $3 an hour.
You're listening to the Professional Left Podcast, professionalleft.blogspot.com.
There was no vetting at the Trump White House, and
at
the
all.
Andrew Breitbart bloggers were allowed to be major top-level staffers.
Steve Bannon. Steve fucking Bannon is Donald Trump's right-hand stooge. I mean, his Svengali, his guru, the man who tells him all, here's who you need to screw next, here's who you need to destroy next. And just that alone is staggering.
Yeah.
But the fact that everyone else in his White House apparently is completely incompetent.
Yeah.
And has wired up nine different ways to corrupt money deals or shit they should have talked about or just fucking lie.
Yeah.
Is staggering, and it's a measure of not how far we have fallen, because we haven't. It is a measure of the difference between the left and the right, between
Thank
Democrats
you.
And Republicans. This is not a general downward trend of our politics.
Thank you.
This is one party does this, and one party doesn't. And people who tell you otherwise are selling something.
Or lying
to you, or they're running an agenda that is not going to be congenial to your needs.
Or they're just willfully blind. I mean, there are some out there that are just willfully blind and must have a two-party system that just is either the corrupt duopoly or equally balanced, you know, in terms of goodness and badness. But yeah, this is one party that has just sold their soul at least since Citizens United, and I would argue before.
Well, that's important.
And it is not government's evil, government's bad, and so let's get rid of government was a ruse. And what we are actually doing is looting the place and privatizing all of the taxpayer dollars to put them in our own pockets. That is the corruption that's been going on for decades.
It is.
Since at least the 80s. All right.
And right now in the filthy midden pile that is the everyday behavior of the Trump administration, all of the Bush regime dead enders are trying to grow a little garden. they're planting little seeds about how this isn't my Republican Party. This, if you listen to this podcast over the years, or if you've read either of our writings over a decade, the point at which you are allowed to talk about the past, if you're on the left, extends backwards for hundreds of years, thousands of years. We're happy to talk about history, you know, the warts and all. The point at which you're allowed to talk about the past, if you're on the right, keeps getting closer and closer to this morning.
Mm-hmm.
Because
mm-hmm.
it gets really inconvenient for Michael Gerson, who wrote a long column today, a Bush speechwriter.
By the way, we have, in case you think you're in a time warp, we have switched now and are recording the rest of this podcast from here on Friday morning.
We were
Friday
interrupted
afternoon.
by reality and life.
Reality.
Yes. But we want to finish this off. Michael Gerson, who was in charge of putting clever words about going to war on false pretenses into George Bush's mouth, is and who was a lifelong Republican and an apologist for the Republican Party, and was perfectly happy to pile on Barack Obama, suddenly is shocked that his party is full of crazy people. Doesn't know where they came from. And he keeps writing the same goddamn column over and over again. Oh my God, conservatism. Donald Trump has destroyed conservatism. Joe Scarborough, whose job is...
Let me talk about this.
Please do.
Because this was the funniest thing
this was today.
On television.
That actually,
This was the funniest thing on television all week, in my personal opinion.
Including Mr. Ed, which is a fucking funny
including Mr.
show.
Ed. This is hilarious.
This is the other end of the horse talking.
Yeah. Joe Scarborough screaming at his television, literally, and I'm quoting him, "How can Republicans look at a camera and just lie?"
Yeah. Boom.
At that point, you know, irony died.
Yeah. Irony was coming back.
Irony was coming back, and irony died at that moment. But the next segment was Don Rumsfeld.
Don fucking Rumsfeld.
TV being catered to.
Yes.
As in, you know, so what do you think? And what does Don Rumsfeld say? Well, you know, I think we're all being a little hard on Trump because, you know, the foreign policy is going pretty good.
Yeah, at least he flew over there, you know.
At least, yeah, he should get credit for going to the NATO meeting.
Yeah, he went. He physically was carried into.
He shit in their water glasses.
Yes, you know?
And by the way, Barack Obama made him look like another disaster.
Right, Barack Obama was bad too, you know.
I'm sorry to pivot so quickly, but we are running out of time.
Yes.
Barack Obama apparently has in the Obama Foundation charter troll Donald Trump.
Yeah.
Because he was in Germany, coincidentally, at the same time that Donald Trump was.
Whoops.
And
oopsie doopsie, yeah.
Has a crowd size of several hundred thousand young people.
Uh-huh.
Screaming and yelling. And he says things like, you know, I don't think we need to hide behind a wall. And speaking of trolling, I'm sorry to rush through this. But
no, we have to.
Here is Hillary Clinton today giving the commencement address at Wellesley College, where she went and was actually catapulted to fame in the New York Times.
Yep.
Because she gave the student address back when I think it was 1969. And that at that point, there was a kind of an onward and upward establishment speech given about, you know, go along to get along from some guy who gave the speech at her commencement. And she stood up and said, oh, hell no. You know, the war matters. Mm-hmm. Justice matters. Civil rights matter. Women's rights matter. And it really did catapult her. She got quite a bit of attention for that speech as a student graduate, you know, from Wellesley.
Uh-huh.
So here she is coming back and, you know, having been through a great many years full of activity.
Uh-huh.
She mentioned that at the time of her speech, people were pretty mad about the president of the United States, who eventually got impeached for obstruction of justice.
Don't.
Yeah. And everybody cheered.
Yeah.
At Hillary Clinton today for saying that.
Yeah.
So, you know, she sounds better. And I have to say that she made the same point you did, Driftglass.
Although
she did. She didn't put it quite in the partisan way that you did. But she
not
did
so many
say,
fucks.
This is not us. Mm-hmm. This is them. This is not where the world is going. This is where one side of our politics is going.
Yeah.
This is not, and as I said earlier on this podcast, you know, when we were recording yesterday, this is not our coarsened politics leading to body slams.
Yes.
This is one party deciding that manhood means being brutal.
Right.
And that being brutal is okay.
Yes.
I'm all for being brutal verbally on a podcast and telling people what I really think of them in terms of lying and destroying our economy and treating poor people like shit. I am more than willing to go brutal that way.
Yeah.
But body slamming a reporter for asking about a CBO score is, you know, Driftglass, the extremes on both sides, really.
You know. Well, can I say two things about that?
Yeah.
One, Chuck Todd got all bent out of shape because of the...
And I disagree about this. I guess we'll end with this, because this is our disagreement. But you go right ahead.
Well, the first part is, yes, you body slammed a reporter, but you also body slammed the poor with your budget. You also body slammed the sick and the indigent with your stupid tax cut for billionaires. So Republicans believe in brutality across the board.
They believe in body slamming everybody.
They believe in hurting people who disagree with them in any way they can.
Yep.
And that's the only way they can feel good and feel like men... is by inflicting misery on people who are less than them, and then creating or adapting an ideology that says inflicting misery on the weak is what you're supposed to do. You know, the unfit shouldn't survive. It should be a Hobbesian war, and it should be a Randite jungle where only people like us survive, and everyone else should be our help or food.
Yep.
And so fuck it. Well, we beat up a reporter. If he's too weak to fight back, well, maybe that's his fault. But Chuck Todd got all bent out of shape. Chuck Todd, who runs Meet the Press and a bunch of other things, with whom I disagree a lot. He said words to the effect of, and he was very clear about this, and I give him credit for this, about how this idea of the liberal media, that the excuse this guy used, this clown in Montana used, was the liberal media got up in my face. And what do you expect from people like that? Was he said, you know, this has been common parlance on the right for a long time. And, you know, and ha-ha, it's a joke, and this is the way it goes, et cetera. And John Heilman also made Nicole Wallace sweat off about 15 pounds on her show when he said, look, you can bullshit all you want, but when you were working for George Bush, you used to slam the liberal New York Times all the time. Every time you fuckers lie, I'm taking a bit of liberty with what he actually said. Every time you assholes lie, every time you blew something up, every time you fucked up, you blamed the liberal media. Well, guess what? Now everyone in your party thinks it's cool to do that. Now, here's my brief with Chuck Todd. His disagreement with this locution was the New York Times portion. Because if you're calling everyone else liberal, anyone else liberal, the crazy left, the extreme left, the loony left, he's okay with that. There's no problem with that. Yeah, they have been using liberal as a pejorative and calling people like my lovely wife and I traitors as a matter of common vocabulary for 25 fucking years. That never bothered Chuck Todd. That never bothered David Brooks. That never bothered Michael Gerson. When they attach the New York Times to it, though, when the cattle car rolls up to Chuck Todd's house and they start going after people in his personal profession, people that he knows, people that draw the same kind of paycheck he does and have the same kind of business card he does, well, then that is a fucking big deal. Now it's important. Now we have to get up on our high horse and worry about the Republican Party has gone too far. No, dude, they went too far 20 years ago, but you were busy accommodating them right up until it became personal, and now you're affronted. I'm glad you're on board, but maybe what you should do is fire Hugh Hewitt, quit inviting Newt Gingrich on your fucking show, and put Digby on, or put Krugal on, or put any one of a dozen other liberals who could tell you the entire sordid history of the Republican Party on your show. But that's terrifying, and you're never going to do it. That's the end of my rant.
That's now your rant? Well, I just was surprised to see Chuck Todd pivot even a little bit. Mm-hmm. And so I did tweet him that we noticed that. And what he pivoted to was pointing at the camera and saying, elected officials and paid political operatives benefit from this kind of behavior, and they know they do. Mm-hmm. And to me, that was enough of a pivot because he's talking to his friends. He's talking to people that are in his Rolodex by saying that.
I agree.
And to me, that I was surprised that he was able to pivot. I hate to have that low a standard for Chuck Todd, but I did.
I know.
So to me, it was important to say something because I don't want Chuck Todd, and I don't think I have any influence over Chuck Todd whatsoever.
No, I don't either. So,
but yeah, I don't want to leave it from my perspective, from where I am communicating to him, as in any way I can, which I don't. But I wanted to make sure that I communicated the message for my own satisfaction that I noticed that he pivoted and I appreciated that he can pivot because for I don't want him to get off the hook of saying, well, those liberals, no matter what I do, they won't be satisfied.
Yes.
And you know what? I'm not satisfied.
Yeah.
But I don't want him to fall into that excuse.
There's a lot of merit to that. I agree there's a lot of merit to that. And I'm reminded of the last show of the Mary Tyler Moore show, where for 1 minute, Ted Baxter sticks up for his colleagues and says, if you fire them, you'll have to fire me.
Yeah.
And then completely caves.
Right, of course.
And Murray says, you know what? When a jackass flies, I don't fault him for falling back to earth. I'm just amazed that he got up there at all.
Right.
And
right,
so, you know, right. I am perfectly, in my mind, it's perfectly compatible to say I'm amazed that Chuck Todd grew a pair enough to actually point to one side of the aisle to people that are in his Rolodex that he has on his show and say, you know who you are and you're doing bad stuff and I know about it.
Yep.
And I expect him to fall right back to earth in a couple of weeks because that's his nature. That's what he gets paid to do. But hey, He put on, you know, he did one good thing. And if we can't pat someone on the head. Now here's my rule, though. Because there's plenty of conservatives who have come over to the light, come over to the angels. And we've mentioned this before, probably earlier in this podcast.
Yeah.
My rule is all you have to do is admit liberals were right. You don't have to give us a place at the table. You don't have to give us a ribbon. You don't have to give us a big bag of money. I love all those things. But you do have to at least admit that the problem didn't start on November 9th, 2016.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to own the fact that this is your fucking party. And it's been your fucking party for 25 years, and you've made a really good living out of lying about your party and demonizing people who were pointing out the truth all this time.
Well, this connects to something that I wanted to say about Barack Obama.
Uh-huh.
And I think this is where the Trumpism argument will fail, where Charlie Sykes and those types wind up saying, well, this wasn't the Republican Party, this was Trump.
Right.
The fact that Mitch McConnell and Paul Ryan have caved so completely, and you have the former chairman of the RNC in the Trump White House working for him.
Yep.
Their cooperation and their, complicit cooperation with Trump makes it Republicanism.
Of course, they don't get
to make that excuse. Now, that brings me to Barack Obama and how Barack Obama was. There's a connection to how Barack Obama was treated in Germany.
Yeah.
Mitch McConnell stopped Barack Obama from doing what he wanted to do as president.
Yes, he did. On purpose.
Barack Obama would have been very happy, I believe, to continue to write detailed legislation, get an equal pay law passed, get more health care fixed, get a jobs bill passed, get an infrastructure bill passed, go into the weeds of how do we tinker with different agencies and make things better for people, increase manufacturing, do more trade deals, some of which liberals like and some of which liberals don't like. But the point is that Barack Obama is a detail-oriented, process-oriented legislator, and he would have been happy to go along and continue to tinker and pass legislation. It became clear to him second administration that Congress was not going to let him do anything.
Right.
And Mitch McConnell blocked everything that Barack Obama wanted to do.
Yes.
So what did Barack Obama do? Barack Obama, instead of being head of government, became head of state.
Yes.
And what I mean by that is he became, and I'm sorry to say this because I know this is unconstitutional, but he became king of America.
Yeah.
He went on Ellen. He went on Letterman. He went on all of the evening shows. Daily Show, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
He traveled the world and, you know, met with people, joked around with Joe Biden.
Yep.
And basically became a figurehead.
Yes.
A popular, kind,
powerless,
benevolent, but powerless figurehead.
Yes.
He is carrying that now into the future. And he's a young person.
Yes,
he is.
He's
in his 50s.
Yes, he is.
And he can travel the world. And do whatever, you know, meet with, because Angela Merkel will pick up the phone when it's him. And
yes,
so will every other member of NATO.
Yes, they will.
He can influence the world that way.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that Mitch McConnell or Paul Ryan or any other Republican was smart enough to realize what they were doing when they elevated Barack Obama to king.
Yes.
And you know, there are plenty of conservatives out there accusing Barack Obama of being an imperial president.
Mm-hmm.
What they don't realize is they made him that way.
They did.
By taking away his ability to pass legislation, which, as I said, how do you feel about that, Dirk Glass? I think Barack Obama, the Illinois legislator, you know, the state senator, would have loved to have just sat around with his team in the Oval Office
dorking out on
legislation.
Yes,
that would have been,
what he loves. And he's
Nancy
really
Pelosi
good at it.
Nancy Pelosi sit down there and work on a budget, you know, and make it better, right?
And he surrounded himself with people like that. That's exactly who they were. And
that's why health care took so long.
Yes.
Because it was a 2,000-page bill, and he was happy with the wonky details of that,
yes,
right?
And can quote him backwards and forwards, chapter and verse.
Right.
I wouldn't say king. I would say constitutional monarch.
Okay. But you get where I'm going with that.
Absolutely. And I think you make an excellent point. He is the official spokesman of America.
Of sane, normal America.
Yes.
For the rest of his life.
For the rest of his life. He and his wife will be Mr. and Mrs. Sane America for the rest of their lives.
Right. And thanks, Mitch McConnell.
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
okay.
Now we need to end.
We need to end. Each week, we post to our Facebook page and website an Internet Kitty sent in by you, the listeners. This week's Internet Kitty is Cyclone. Cyclone is the fastest, happiest kitty on three legs. Cyclone is missing a foot, but don't worry about that, because it doesn't slow... But don't worry about that. It doesn't slow Cyclone down, not a bit. You can send your Internet Kitty to us at our email address, proleftpodcast@gmail.com, or you can also write to both of us. Feel free to write us. We love hearing from you. Be aware that if you write us at any of our addresses, we reserve the right to read your email or U.S. Postal Service. Go, Postal Unions! Letter on the air unless you say otherwise. Don't forget our gourmet coffee guideline. If you can afford to buy an espresso-based beverage for yourself, buy one for us. And don't forget our Amazon link at our website. We believe in buying local. And we also believe in shopping Amazon with our link if your alternative is a big box store. Approximately 1% of our listeners support this podcast with a contribution, and you can too. See our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com, for details. Both our PayPal and postal address information is there at professionalleft.blogspot.com. We want to thank everyone we've heard from this week from the Bob Seska Show again.
Yes.
We've actually already received snail mail from people who heard us on Bob Seska.
We have.
Amazing. Thank you so much for that. Mm-hmm. Please share our show on Facebook or Twitter, and thank you for doing that. Hey, Driftglass, how are the Internet Kitties doing this week?
Bluegal, the Internet Kitties have no interest whatsoever in being the FBI director, so hey, Donald, stop asking.
Middle child wants to say something.
Middle child just graduated middle school, and if any of y'all want to send me some graduation gifts, that would be great.
What about your brother? Because he's graduating high school.
No. He has enough stuff.
Let's think about living.
Think about living.
Just think about loving.
Think about loving.
Let's think about the hooping and the hopping and the popping and the loving, lovey dovey. Let's forget about the whining and the crying, the shooting and the dying, and the flower and the switchblade knife. Let's think about living. Let's think about life.
The Professional Left Podcast is recorded under a Creative Commons license. Copyright 2017, Driftglass Blue Gal Podcast.